Accession number 22371, Reel 3.
Reel 3.
Well, anyway, the 43rd Division went through and certainly one of their anti-tank batteries. The troop commanders had been replaced. The troop commanders had been killed in these various activities in Normandy and had been replaced by people who had been at that reinforcement holding unit with me. You know, so like meeting up with old friends again. Unfortunately, the chaps who were killed were also old friends. So it was a bittersweet occasion, you know. Do you remember Johnny so-and-so? Yeah, well, I'm afraid he was killed. And this was it, and I've taken his place. And that's roughly how it went. Anyway, I remember this fellow called Cooper, Lieutenant Cooper. He had all his maps there, and he explained to me how the whole operation was working, because I didn't really know. I just knew we were following along. I'd seen the parachutist landed. And I arranged to meet him a few days later. At a place which was not captured by the British for many months, and I never did meet him. Anyway, eventually we took off from there and we went through Eindhoven through the night, and I suppose we were all somewhat short of sleep, because I can remember falling asleep rather a lot. Luckily my driver was a fellow who'd managed all right. We were in jeeps. The standard transport of airborne divisions was jeeps. Without the jeep, the airborne division would have been a different story. Anyway, in the pitch darkness, and quite a lot of shell fire going on intermittently through the evening and the night, it wasn't too far away, but it wasn't that close that you had to duck. Yeah, but it was there. It was a bit unnerving. And in the middle of Eindhoven, some bloke split the column. Some military policeman. And he did it to let an AK-AK column go through. We called ourselves the RA column, you see. All the various artillery units, their B echelons were all together. Anyway, they split us, they held us up. I don't know that I knew or you held up, I just knew that the vehicle in front wasn't moving. But I remember this AK-AK column, because we were, you know, we were side by side on the road, and I remember the AK-AK column moving, and we did not. And that went off into the night. And after sufficient time, and it was really a bit like rush hour traffic, you know, you moved a few feet and stopped, and a few feet and stopped. And about dawn the next day, we came out of Eindhoven into the countryside, and we came to a place which I think is Uden. It's a Dutch village. And on the edge of Uden, there was a bank. You know, there was the road there and a bank here. You know, and the field was up here, I suppose. I don't know. But anyway, there was a bank. And this AK-AK column had been shot to bits by a tank. It was quite poignant, because had we not split the column, that would have been us. You see, because it was that timing they took our place. Anyway, the vehicles were still burning as we came past. And there was a Donar, you know what a Donar is, dispatch rider. He was leaning against the bank like this on his motorbike, but he was dead. But, it, you know, that's how they killed him, just like that. And I remember, sort of, we went to war, you know, we saw it, we saw war at that point. We then went forward. Follow me leader, it was. I'm not sure if I had any maps or anything particularly. Probably had maps of Normandy. I've still got a map of Normandy, but I'm not sure we had maps of Holland. We just went up this one road. And the division settled itself in around a sort of village just outside of Nijmegen. And we hadn't been there many minutes before I was told, down the road at such and such a point, there are a number of fellows from your battery who jumped short. Their glider landed short. So I probably had a driver, or I might have just gone on my own, but I went down there, and there was this fellow Herbie Atkinson that I mentioned. And he had two men with him, and there was a lieutenant called Eustace McNaught, who was a somewhat controversial character. He was a troop commander from the battery, and he was a bad-tempered sod. And I said, well, come on, Eustace. And he said, I'm not coming with you. I've had enough of this. I'm going to join the SAS. And, you know, from that day to this, no one's ever seen him again. So whether he did or what he did, nobody knows. He's an Anglo-Indian. I do remember that. You know, the sallow complexion. None of that made anything wrong with him, but he was. I learnt the story later on of what had happened to Atkinson and McNaught in the previous few days. But anyway, we drove. I collected Atkinson and these two bods and drove down the road, and I was driving. And of course, you know, you drive on the right-hand side. And as we came to a road, so a car whistled out of there. It was another Jeep. Well, you know, in England, you can do things because you're used to being on the other side of the road. It hit us, and we turned over. There was a young gunner survived. I couldn't tell you his name. Atkinson was knocked out completely. He was quite badly hurt. His head was hurt. I was cut about. The other gunner was quite hurt. He would be a bombardier. And they went to hospital. A Dutch nurse appeared out of nowhere and examined everybody and offered first aid. And an ambulance was summoned. And Atkinson and this gunner went off to, just went off into the medical, wherever they went. Didn't see him for months. I then returned. We just picked up the Jeep, and Jeeps are very tough. And whatever had fallen on the road, we put it on top of the Jeep and just drove back. When I got there, there were instructions that I was to raise a troop of anti-tank guns and join the 101st Airborne. You know, the American, right? Famous division. And I'll tell you something about them. That film got exactly the right atmosphere of those people. They were like that all the time. I had the highest regard for them. I mean, our own airborne chaps were hot stuff. But the Americans have a flamboyance about them. You know, they're like, they're a bit theatrical. And they were like that. And I loved them, actually. Anyway, so I gathered this troop together. Well, we had two guns. Well, I gathered all these various drivers and so on from the B echelon. Luckily, they'd all been trained as gunners. Battery commander had been very strict about that through the training periods of your formation. And we produced enough people to man the two guns, and the South Staffs produced two guns with equivalent men, so we had a troop. I didn't have a headquarters staff, anything like that. It was just me. There was another Jeep. There were a couple of Jeeps. I must have had a driver and another Jeep.
So you became a unit in the 101st?
That's right. I was told to report to them at Vagel, if you're familiar with that place. It's a great centre, was Vagel. There was hardly a brick upon a brick at Vagel. Anyway, they sent me to in support of the 501st US, whatever it is, airborne unit, parachute unit. I didn't know, but they were, the whole American Air Force, airborne forces started with the 501. That film, you know, was on television, was the 506. They were all 50 something. 504 assaulted the Rhine, you know, at Nijmegen. 501 were there. And they were deployed between Vagel and Sertogenbosch. I don't know how good your geography is. But
yes, I know.
The road down to back into Belgium was down through Vagel, and the Germans kept breaking the road. They no great difficulty. Most of the traffic on that road was soft-skinned traffic. It wasn't fighting units. And as soon as a tank appeared, that was it. The road was broken. Anyway, the division, the 101, was deployed out in that area to keep the Germans away. So we went out and joined them. And I was there for several days. I couldn't tell you how long.
Were you in any fighting there?
Very, very, very small. There was just a local patrolling. We didn't see a tank they ever shot at. Americans are very funny people, actually. They're very friendly, aren't they?
The Americans?
Yeah, but they have a sort of strange attitude to things. They would call O groups, you know, because a plan had been made. And I would be kept outside and not told anything. And then they'd have me in and say, that's what we're going to do, and that's what you're going to do. And I'd say, what about that and that? No idea. What about, you don't need to know that. Yeah. Whereas the custom of the British Army was to give the maximum information at that point in time you needed. And in fact, it wasn't far off, and it was nearly tragic that they were so parsimonious about the whole thing. The commander of the battalion was clearly anti-British. He found every reason why he should make cracks about the British. Nonetheless, we were professionals doing a job, and he was a very professional man. The need for the 101 to occupy the area between Vagel and Sertogenbosch had declined, I suppose mainly because the Germans had ceased their activity. They were in the early days, they kept cutting the corridor. That is the corridor from Belgium up into Nijmegen. They just stopped doing it. I think they were involved in other battles elsewhere. By that time, the British Army had strengthened. The 101 was retained in the British Army. If you read the history books, they weren't any too pleased about this. The American Army was not. But anyway, that was retained by the British Army for a while. And so it pulled out of the Sertogenbosch area and went up to Driel, which is on the banks of the Rhine. Just as you think of the geography of that area, the Rhine has formed deltas, which makes these different rivers, which is the River Rhine and the Lower Rhine and the Waal, and no, not the Waal, but anyway, it makes for these rivers. And so Holland is divided by rivers, and the contact between one and another are bridges. That's the whole object of that operation, was to capture those bridges intact, which would have opened up the road into Germany. However, The last bridge was a bridge at Arnhem, where there were two or three bridges. The main one, of course, being the road bridge, and the second one being the railway bridge, which was blown. And at the southern end of the railway bridge is this little village of Driel. It became famous. I mean, it's a sleepy little place tucked away. A little bit of farmland where a lot of smallholders. Not unlike parts of Lincolnshire, actually. But anyway, it became famous because that is where the Polish Brigade landed. You know, it was a parachute brigade, which landed straight onto German defences and had appalling casualties. Nonetheless, the Poles being what they were, they got on top of the situation. And so that was Driel. It became famous for that. And if you go there are enormous war memorials there to all sorts of people, the biggest, of course, being the Poles. Anyway, we went up to Driel. I don't know whether I had a map even. All I had, I certainly had seen the map that the American commander had. And I knew where we had to go. What I didn't know was that the area was bisected by a long railway embankment. See, the railway bridge over the Rhine, the railway then became a long embankment. And to the east of that embankment was German territory. And they had very strong troops in there. The road into the area we were going to occupy ran alongside this embankment. So, if you like, we were on either side of the embankment. That is why I regretted not knowing. If I'd realised the Germans were a few yards away, I think I might have reviewed the whole thing a little differently. Anyway, we had to relieve the Dorsets. Now, the Dorsets had been cut to bits. They had put a very substantial part of their battalion across the river to try and relieve 1st Airborne Div, and a very large number of them were casualties or prisoners. Anyway, so very thin on the ground, we went up. The Dorsets, incidentally, were 43rd Wessex Division, whom I referred to earlier. Anyway, so I got up there, and nobody stuck their heads out very much. I was aware of that very quickly. It was very flat country. I left my guns way back and went forward myself with, I suppose, one or two men, and contacted their battalion headquarters, which was in a tiny little cottage, and from there found out where their dispositions were. And they lent me a guide to take me around. Well, anyway, he was a perky little fellow, and we set off and we walked around this area. I'd no idea at that time that every step we took must have been observed by the German who were up on a hill just the other side of the river watching everything. They had an observation post up there. However, the guide, we ended up at a company headquarters, which was just on the banks of the River Rhine, in an orchard. And by that time it was dark. And the Germans occupied the main road into this area where this company headquarters was. A German patrol had just gone out and occupied a farmhouse. But it was a patrol, an extension of that strong German force, which was the other side of that embankment, because we were very close to that embankment. I didn't know any of this. You know, it was all, you know, I was learning as I went along. Anyway, I found out where their guns were, and that particular gun in that was outside that company headquarters had been hit by a shell or something like that, or a mortar, and had a broken axle, which, you know, was lying sort of drunkenly. They were about to abandon it anyway. Now, there were very few people in this company. You know, it was about platoon strength. You know, it was very thin on the ground. And there was In this little group of farmhouses, the Germans occupied half of them, and this company occupied the other half. And they threw grenades at each other and things like that. And the Germans had a grenade, which I'd never heard of before or since, which was a bit like a firework, a jumping jack. It went out and it, you know, there was a little explosion and it shot out bits of metal and shot itself somewhere else. We had fireworks like that sold here on Guy Fawkes Day. Anyway, there was a fellow who was brought in with all these bits of metal in. I didn't feel any great encouragement to sort of wander about, except that I knew I had to get back. Added to which, anyone who stuck his head out, there was a burst from the German machine gun. So, it was a dilemma, as you'd appreciate. So I waited till the burst from the machine gun had finished, and then I ran for it. And mentally, I dug myself a trench all the way through that orchard. Actually, of course, I didn't. I just ran like hell. Somewhere down the line, I had a pistol in my hand, and somewhere down the line, a German stepped forward, so I shot him. I didn't wait to find out the result of it. I just carried on. And he didn't make any noise either. And anyway, I got out of there and found a little bridge, which, you know, which bypassed this German stronghold. And I returned and gathered together my guns and set about putting them in the dark. By this time I knew that you couldn't put them in during the daylight at all. You know, you'd have been shot to bits. So the first three guns was quite easy. Really, it was replacing the guns of the Dorsets. They had a platoon there. The fourth gun, of course, was this one at the company on the river. And I tried to take the gun over the little bridge, and the bridge collapsed. Bloody awful situation.
What was the bridge made of?
Wood. It was a little farm bridge. It was wide enough to travel on, but just the wood was rotten.
So did the gun become inaccessible?
Yeah. The gun went down. Well, the bridge, unfortunately, was over a very deep ditch. And in Holland in those days, ditches were deep, deep, you know, 15 feet, probably more. And you'd have 6 feet of water in the bottom. We lost that gun anyway. In the middle of the night, we just lost it. We got the Jeep in, and the Jeep was all right. But the gun was too heavy to maneuver, and too difficult. God knows what a gun costs. Anyway, so I took the gun detachment. Now, the gun detachment actually came from the South Staffs. They were good chaps. But I thought, well, I'll sort this out tomorrow. You know, let's do one thing at a time. So I took the gun detachment through there and introduced them to this gun that had been smashed up by the mortar fire, which didn't excite them very much. And I then went off to try and see if I could get some help to get this gun out. The following day, I found the an armoured car regiment, which was the Household Cavalry, and asked if they could help. And when they found out where it was, they absolutely refused. And once I realised that actually we were only yards from a sort of fairly strong German force, I can't understand what their reluctance was. He said, look, the best thing you can do is get yourself a new gun. So I did. You know, it took a couple of days. I was surprised how quickly it came through. Unfortunately, that morning, the Germans made an attack across that, from where they were, the other side of the railway embankment. There was an infantryman Well, the American infantry... The American infantry cleared the Germans out of that farmhouse. They were quite strong from the 501 parachute regiment, and I heard them go in and attack. I had very high regard for the Americans for that particular division. Anyway, the Germans attacked, and they sent a small tank, which I think was one of the French Renault tanks that they had captured. And they sent that through a sort of hole in the embankment, you know, where there was a road, a little bridge. And they sent it through there, and it was peppering the area with machine gun fire. And an American and the sergeant from the South Staffs rushed forward and attended to the gun that was the damaged gun, and they fired around at it and knocked that tank to bits. Much to the joy of all the squaddies around the place, American or British, they knew who it was. In due course, I got another gun and replaced that one. And by that time, there was no German patrol stopping us getting through, and we went in. Now, during that first day, the area was shelled pretty constantly. You didn't have to stick your head out of in sight very much before the OP on top of the hill on the other side of the river saw you and let you know that they were there. Within somewhere around mid-morning, one of my men was quite badly hit, a chap called Gunner Simmons, who in fact was my driver. A staunch Yorkshireman. Anyway, he had a lot of bits of metal in him, in his head and in his stomach. We sort of put bandages on him as much as possible. He was bleeding quite a lot. When suddenly there was a Jeep ambulance went by. Now, I don't know if you know about these, but the airborne divisions had special modifications on Jeeps. So they would take several ambulances. You know, I can't entirely remember how it was. I just remember that there were men everywhere. Probably four or five men on stretchers. That occupies a big area. Anyway, Simmons went in on this ambulance and just went off. He went off into an American hospital. He told me afterwards that they were shelled all the way up as they drove away from where we were. Anyway, he recovered and returned to the unit some 6 months later. Now, we stayed there for about a week, I suppose.
How far outside Drill was it?
Half a mile. Drill is a tiny village. In fact, Drill really is the area. You know, there is just the village of Drill, but there were odd farm buildings around the place. I made myself a headquarters in one of these farm buildings. All the local population disappeared. In fact, the first morning we were there, the last of them were taken away in lorries, and I don't know where they went, now they again, I suppose. They were refugees, which is not very nice for them. And so all the farms were empty. And many of them burnt here. It was the practice of the German army to, by shell fire, to set one on fire every night so that you lit up the countryside. A barn or a farm. They were tiny farms, actually. It was a fairly impoverished area, so they were tiny farms.
and a fruit-growing area, so it was all orchards. And these little roads, you know, there's a lot of controversy about why the guards armoured div didn't drive through there. They wouldn't have gone 100 yards, those roads would have collapsed under them. They were just tiny roads, tiny little dirt roads. At the time, I didn't quite realise the significance of where I was, or the history of it all.